I'm here with Paulette Jordan. She's the Democrat Party's choice to run for governor of Idaho. Paulette, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here.
First, tell us just a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born and raised in North Idaho, primarily. In the summer times, my dad remarried, so I grew up part-time in Blackfoot, Idaho, or Fort Hall, and they had a 200-acre horse ranch, so wow. I really love being down here for various reasons, all the good memories, and so this is not a new area to me, but being that I was raised out in the countryside, my grandparents on both sides were, my father's side, they ranched roughly 1.5 million acres, and then on my mother's side, they farmed. So we have a lot of wheat, pulses, and timothy. So we're just big on cultivation of our land and living off our land and being very self-sufficient, very independent people. So I grew up in a very strong culture. We're very faithful people. And because we're so rural, we really rely on our own devices, which is why we're, you know, in so many ways, really strong on family values. And so I'm thankful to come across good communities like the Mormon faith. And my own brother, who is actually married into the Mormon church,
oh, really?
He's really taught me a lot. And so we definitely have a lot in common when it comes down to our own principles and values. So yeah, I'm indigenous to this area. I come from a long legacy of leaders. My grandfathers were actually chiefs of the Northwest. And so they were very strong and compassionate human beings who really stood for independence of this land and taught a lot of the earlier visitors how to survive and cultivate themselves and not only hunt and know where there's, know the good layout of the land, but to also show this good faith in being good neighbors and taking care of one another. So I love that my grandparents were just good leaders in that way. And so here, as I was raised by my elders in my community, I'm thankful because I have now a legacy of values and experience from them to pass on to my own children, but also carry forward in this form of running for office. So in this political nature, I'm able to say that our values and principles are carried forward in politics.
Now, you've been in politics for a little while. You were a state legislator, and then you decided to run for governor.
Mm.
When you told your family, especially your kids, what was their reaction?
They were actually excited. My kids were older, so they're 8 and 14 now, but they were more happy because my son said, wow, my mom's going to be governor. And it wasn't even a thought. There was no hesitation that I couldn't do it or that there would be some challenges. He just said, oh, well, when mommy decides to do something, she's going to do it. So it was more just, my mommy's going to be the best governor ever. And so I have the two greatest cheerleaders I could ever ask for are my sons.
Now, in politics, we like to do this thing. We label people, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, mm-hmm. you're an independent. You're an Idahoan.
Mm-hmm.
And
First and foremost, yes.
First and foremost, right.
Yeah.
You're a Native American
mm-hmm.
and a rancher and mm-hmm. all these things. When you think about who you are, how do you want to represent yourself to the people of Idaho?
I keep it simple. You know, I tell people that above and beyond my experience in business as a national business leader or serving in Idaho politics or even my service back home, I'm just raised by the people who value the land. My grandparents, they were very simple folks. You would really say a lot more about me by how I reflect their teachings, their upbringing in me from a young girl on to my adult age. So I'm just a mother, really, most simple and proud because they're the reasons why we fight. Your father, yourself, so you know what it means to be a parent. You know, you do everything for your children. You sacrifice everything, even your own comfort. You know, and when it comes down to someone threatening the future of your children, you do whatever it takes to ensure that they have the best and the brightest. And for me, that's it. That's what drives me every day to do better for Idaho is I'm fighting for my kids. And essentially now I'm a mother to all Idaho children. So I'm fighting for all of our kids.
Now let's talk policy for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You say on your website that some of your big issues, I think like all candidates in Idaho, education, healthcare, lands, things like that. Do you want to speak specifically about some of your positions?
Absolutely. It's a great opportunity to say how much I value public land because I grew up hunting and fishing on Idaho's land, and I'm really thankful for the memories that I have from my father, my uncles, cousins, you know, being able to get out into the mountains, fishing around the lake, in our rivers, And because we have that way of life, I want to make sure that we maintain that way of life. And I'm a gun owner. My kids are gun owners. I definitely support the Second Amendment and will ensure that we have those rights and the autonomy to continue to, you know, into perpetuity to hunt and fish and recreate. Idaho should be protected, which is why I will never sell Idaho's public lands. And I'm doing my best in promoting this as governor that once I am elected, I will ensure that we keep our public lands accessible. But the other part is, too, we have a right and a responsibility at the same time to be mindful of our environment, ensuring that we're keeping our clean air and water protected. We want to make sure that we take care of our soil quality and we're not polluting what right now is still able to be conserved or protected for future generations. So I'm very mindful of everything and going to be promoting the best balance possible once I'm governor. And when it comes down to education, you know, people, if they looked at my history, my background, when education was stricken from our people, the challenges remained that you are plaguing a society and promoting the ills of those who really are not able to do for themselves. So education, in my mind, and our culture, our way of life, is really the best gift that you can offer someone because you're teaching them independence and to do right by others. So I definitely promote education in every facet. And right now I'm working to build a pipeline of education, which is, you know, in opposition to a pipeline for our prison system, which is what we see more of. Most teachers that I meet will say that they can tell whether a child will go off to delinquency rates, higher delinquency rates, or prison systems by just assessing them by grade 3. If they're not literate by that level, then they're oftentimes set up for failure. And so I've learned from my own children who've been able to benefit from our early childhood learning center that my own aunt built back home in Plummer, Idaho, that when children are educated between 0 and 5, they are more likely to have a higher success rate and, of course, be able to contribute to society in a broader sense. So I'm really big on ensuring that our people are able to not only think independently and more critically, but promote better growth of our communities and improve our society in such a way that we're all, again, able to be contributive to each other and build upon our successes. So education is it for me, and we have to start promoting investments in K-12 and helping our people go on to higher education or get into vo-tech training, because we have those 7,000 unfilled jobs that would, you know, we're just sitting open last year alone. We have a growing tech sector, so we want to be also mindful of the future of work in this state and in our country because our children should be able to compete in the broader global market. So that means ensuring that we have these programs available and we're building on those successes, especially offering programs like gifted and talented programs at the local level or incentivizing dual programming to offset college tuition, you know, having a running start. We need advanced placement programming, more STEM programs for, you know, the earlier ages in grade school, primary. And then, of course, I'm big in healthcare. As we know, we've talked about this all across this campaign and along this trail where we're saying how we see and hear all these stories of many of Idahoans who are suffering without healthcare. And it's unfortunate that we have not expanded Medicaid. And I know there are arguments on both sides, but really what it comes down to me is simple principles, which is we take care of each other. And so I want to make sure that Idahoans have affordable and have access to healthcare. So affordable healthcare is the first step forward. And right now that means expanding Medicaid in the state. So I do support voting yes on Prop 2 come November 6th. But I do want to make sure that we are also building a proper structure moving forward, which would mean more of a universal healthcare program that's a statewide healthcare program that's, again, in the same line, that's affordable healthcare that is also accessible, especially in rural components of Idaho.
Now, speaking of healthcare, the governor and the Department of Insurance have tried some things to give access, better access to healthcare for Idahoans. The Idaho Exchange is one of the only left in the United States, and it's hit and miss, I think, mm-hmm. with families, and expanding healthcare may open that up to more families. Do you think what the governor has done this year is helping or can help in the future?
It was an attempt, you know, to try something different. But I will tell you that it saved maybe $30 million at the local level. We would save $10 million alone in the first 6 months once we expand Medicaid, and then we'll save roughly $635 million within the next 10 years. So Idaho will have significant changes in how we apply healthcare at the local level. We'll not only save our rural clinics, but we can expand in rural healthcare, especially when it comes to telemedicine for many of us who are like myself, we're in small towns of less than 1,000 people. And I think when you look at the problems with, when you dig deeper, you look at the problems within rural transportation and even just a transportation system altogether, that's frustrating because we oftentimes don't have access to even rural broadband. So my ultimate goal is to build on rural broadband so that we're making sure that we're all accessing these systems, but also rural transportation. So we're connecting our corridors to allow people to have this transportation unit to even just access simple healthcare visits for primary care and such.
Speaking of the primary care, Idaho has a shortage of doctors, mm-hmm. and just this fall opened its first medical school. Yes. Do you have plans to help build that up?
Absolutely. So the bigger challenge is, you know, we have osteopathic care, but we want to expand in another medical school as well. There are studies that show that states who have contributed to building or to a plan that will basically, it's a commitment for the next 10 years, whether that's putting $10 million aside each year or for the next 5 years or even building that out, structuring it so we have a medical school within the next 5 years or 10 years. The point being is we'll have research available internally in our state, and then we're also driving more medical doctors to be within Idaho because we have a growing population and we have a very high ratio of doctors per clients, and we want to make sure that we're lowering that ratio. And the bigger challenge is we are 50th in the nation when it comes to pediatricians and, of course, primary care providers. So we have to make our state more attractive, and oftentimes it's by building your own base. And a lot of our Idahoans want to go on to a medical school, but we incentivize that by building one in our own state. And then on top of that, providing scholarships, opportunities for them to offset their loans, and then even incentivizing them further to stay in Idaho by paying them better. Right now, they're some of the lowest paid providers. And so it's hard to compete with other states that will pay oftentimes more, twice more. And so we just have to do better, especially for rural clinics and retaining our doctors as is.
Now, you mentioned Proposition, I just forgot the number, if it's one or two.
Two.
Yeah, there's another proposition.
Yes.
And that one's about historical horse racing.
Prop 1.
Yeah, Prop 1. What are your feelings on that one?
Prop 1, you know, I leave that up to the people. I will tell folks that you have to be mindful that horse racing is already legal in this state. What they're looking to legalize are slot machines. And, you know, slot machines themselves are illegal according to our Constitution. And I think that the people will have to dig deeper into researching this issue because what they'll find out that I come from actually a family of horse racers, and we train horse races, our horses in our family who were, you know, it was part of a culture that I grew up on. And my grandparents actually were very, very broad in that, that they love to go out and, you know, support the horse racing community and love the culture, where horse breeding culture. And but the fact that I grew up riding horses, I fully support the culture itself. And unfortunately, it is a dying industry, but I want to see it come back. However, whether that's by slot machines or not, I wouldn't be able to tell you because I think, again, this is why it's nice to leave it up to the people. But I try to remind folks that you are also supporting a casino industry being built in and around the state. And what that draws is a different kind of community sometimes. And I'm not really supportive of gambling itself. I actually represent the national community, the National Indian Gaming Association, as the secretary and the finance chair. But why I support that community and why it's important for the tribes is through even the Nixon administration, and under his presidency, he has supported the self-sufficiency of growing the economy amongst tribes so that they are able to be not only self-sufficient and independent, but to allow them to grow in another arena, which is also their culture too, which is a gambling culture. And there's an old game called Stick Game, if you ever heard of it, but it actually teaches you something morally. And if you'll look into it at some point, it's called Grandmother Sky, and it's about the yin and the yang. And so the gambling structure is based off of that old story. But the point being, gambling, while I don't necessarily, I don't promote it, but it's still an economic engine for the tribes. And it's in a very rural sector, and the tribes are sovereign, so this is their choice. And for me as governor to support gambling is really not under my umbrella. I would say that I do support horse racing. It's already legal. I love the horse culture because that is my culture. As far as slot machines, I do not support those slot machines in Idaho. You know, a lot of folks have asked me about the Prop 1 issue, and I've always been very honest about this. And I said, if the people pass this initiative, I'm always going to support the will of the people. So I'm always just concerned more so about the safety of our communities. And knowing what the gaming industry brings, you have to be heavy-handed in regulation. So I just want to make sure that people are mindful of that and where that position is, because in all honesty, I'm a parent, so I want to make sure that we're protecting our communities and really be prepared for what that would mean if we do pass Prop 1, because there will be casinos all over our state, and we just want to be mindful of that. So,
thank you. Let's talk about the INL a little bit, Idaho National Laboratory. Sure. What is your position about research of spent nuclear fuel that they'd like to do?
So my background, actually, I got to serve, I had the good privilege of serving on the Energy Committee and the State House, and I've learned a lot having gone through the energy policy and planning program at the U of I. In the process, especially now running for governor, I've learned that, you know, of course, the 1995 nuclear agreement is one that we should stand firm on. As will I, as both Governor Batt did and Governor Andrews did in his time. And so I'm thankful that they had such strong leadership to protect our water and our aquifer especially. But we have to hold to those agreements. The legacy waste definitely needs to be shifted out of our state as planned. I will not take in any more new waste. We do have the research available. There's some new developments that are good. However, we have been proposed to take in new shipments. I'm not in favor of taking in any more new shipments. We have to basically process what we have now sitting in Idaho and then ship that out as planned.
I know you probably get asked this a lot, but being a Democrat and being Native American, if you became governor, that would be historic, not just in Idaho, but in the whole nation. Mm-hmm. What does this mean to you?
What it means for me and everyone else is there's a change in our country for the better. There has never been an Indigenous person elected to governor in this country. And what I like to see about that is my grandfathers, you know, they actually led some wars that were pretty significant, you know, in this region. My grandfather, Chief Kamaikin, he led the Yakima War. And he fought for freedom and independence. And my grandfather's Chief Kamaikin and others, they all stood firm on their rights to sovereign independence. And they were always fighting for their future generations. And here I am, their granddaughter, now running for governor. And I wonder sometimes what they would say, but I know that, as my relatives would say, that they're very proud, because it's about time that we reflect the true roots of this land in what we now see in this modern day government. And I think there's a broad opportunity to show the people that, you know, we're not only very civilized, but we're deeply rooted in the ultimate form of governing should be about the rights of the people first. In our structure, as I learned growing up, my grandfathers who were chiefs, they would always say that the people always come first. You would always be the last in line to be served or to settle your own needs. So you would make sure that everyone in the community is taken care of first. I really love that notion and idea and the value behind that, because this is what I don't see much of, you know, in politics today. So I'm proud to say that I can carry this forward and live on that legacy and promote the legacy through this level of politics. So as governor, I would be most proud to show what it is truly like to reflect the heritage of this land, the history of our people in leadership.
As you've crisscrossed the state, meeting people and holding events, What has most surprised you about the people you've met?
Most surprising is when people lower their guard, when they know that you're fighting on their behalf and they see you beyond any party affiliation. We're all really one people. I will meet folks who were on standoffs and say, you know, in other parts of our country who were fighting for their own independence, just, you know, fighting for autonomy. And they'll realize that they have a champion right in front of them. People who will say that they are, you know, certainly anti-government and see that, okay, there's someone who is very pro-government, knowing that this government can work for all of us if we work together and building faith around that. Because they've seen what it has done. If they looked at my own history, they will see that big government has not been good for my own relatives at one point in time. But I'm hopeful that when people work together, we can have civility amongst what we do. And working collectively is my aim. And I could see improvements in our system when we do so. So I'm always taken by people that I meet who, especially when they're in their 90s and they're, you know, old farmers coming through or old veterans and mostly men that'll come to me and say, I've never voted in my life, but for the first time ever, I feel inspired by you. And I happen to be a young woman who looks nothing like them, but they'll say, your way, your being, you know, has moved me. And sometimes some of these folks will be to tears. And that puts me in a very humble place. But it reminds me that we have more than politics going for us. It's about the mountains and the spirit of everything that is in our world that is helping us move forward together. I mean, when you have the mountains on your side, yeah, there's nothing that can take you down.
If you are elected governor, what's the first thing you'll do?
My plan for the next 4 years: promote education, we'll build healthcare, we're going to protect our public lands. Those are my top three. Everything comes down to what we're going to do to ensure that our children have a foundation that cannot be unsettled. So it's going to take a strong plan, but we're building up to making sure we build in securities for our people. We're making sure that we have livable wages. There's going to be a place for everyone at the table, and not one person is left out. So even the most vulnerable, we want people to talk about affordable health care, affordable housing, our police, making sure that our local counties, cities have a seat at the table. This is why I'm big on local autonomy, making sure that local control is also at the forefront. So everyone, I think, will be surprised to see how much we care about their voice, and they're going to see how well we build a plan for the future, because when we're all at the table working together as one, we will truly see a better Idaho.
If you had one statement that you could say to a voter, what would that be?
Believe and have faith. Because if you believe that a woman can win in our state, we will win. We're going to make it happen.
Paulette Jordan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, sir. Very kind.